This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guardians taking on the Tigers, starting at 1 o'clock Saturday. 1:08, whatever. Be there 8 minutes early. Ain't gonna hurt you to be there 8 minutes early. And to talk about it, we welcome in Todd Derry from the Derry Brothers Guardians cast, which you can hear right here on the free Odyssey app. Yeah, that's right. They're part of the Odyssey family. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Todd, how the hell are you?
Fantastic. There's no better bit than Ken, the Michigan fan. I love it.
I'm not a Michigan fan, though. Like, Lima has got
a bit, Todd.
Oh, I was in Talmadge for Friday night touchdown, and they were having youth night, and the one coach had their players chanting that I was a Michigan fan. They were chanting on my kids. I swear to you guys, that's the truth. Anyway, on my kids, I swear to you, I'm a little bit nervous now. And it's not like I'm not worried about the Big Bad Tigers or anything. You think about the entire season in its entirety, how great of a season it's been. And now I've gone from, hey, you know, let's give them hell here. We won the Central Division. We're great. Let's give them hell to, boy, you better beat the Tigers. But somebody did point this out to me on social media, Todd. It's like, well, plenty of people picked the Tigers to actually win the division. Maybe we're still the team that doesn't have any pressure. Maybe we're still the team with house money. Which team has house money, Todd?
I think the Tigers do because they're playing so loose. No one expected them to be here. Everyone, you know, it's a big story. I know now people nationally are starting to pick it up, but I would say nationally the Tigers have a real positive, loose vibe. People are rooting for them. So if you want to say that gives them a little pressure, I would say, sure, I agree. But on the other side of it, you hear a lot from, and again, the Twitter echo chamber doesn't speak to how many true Guardians fans are out there, but you hear a lot of, well, really, they haven't done anything deep in the playoffs since 2016. And it's ridiculous to have the mindset of, to me, would you rather be the Pittsburgh Pirates or, you know, one of these other garbage franchises that every year you know you have no chance, or would you rather be competing and getting to the playoffs every year, which I believe that's how I like it. So I think both sides have that pressure. It's just in a different way. I think there's locally more pressure for the Guardians to get to the ALCS again, but I think the pressure nationally is starting to build on the Tigers, if that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, Todd, we know the Tigers, hottest team in baseball. You're going to hear this to death until we finally play this game on Saturday. First of all, the few off days, does it maybe kill some of that momentum, and how nervous should we be about this series?
I absolutely think, well, here, you could look at it two ways. I think it does kill their momentum, the 2 days off, but they probably partied super hard, and now they have 2 days to work on that hangover, be over that hangover. From a how worried am I standpoint, the Tigers, or the unnamed team, as my brother and I like to call them on the Derry Brothers Guardians cast, we look at this team kind of in the same way that a lot of people look at the Guardians. Look at this roster, okay? I would say I am a top-tier baseball fan who knows a lot about the sport, who follows the sport as much as anyone. Brennan Hanafy, Sean Gunther, Brant Hunter, Herder, Will Vest, these are the guys they're bringing out of the bullpen. Ty Madden, their backup catcher, I'd never heard of this guy. I had to look it up. Dylan Dingler, the pride of Massillon, Ohio, by the way. But this roster is a collection of young players who no one knows. So the Guardians are a similar way on a national standpoint, save for Jose Ramirez, obviously, you know, your star player. But do you think a lot of people know who Brian Rocchio is, or who Will Brennan is, or who John Kenzie Noel is, or the big four in the bullpen not named, you know, Class A? Kate Smith's not a household name. Guy's probably the best, most dominant right-handed reliever in the game this season. So I think it's very similar. The teams match up well. I am worried from the standpoint of you're catching the hottest team in baseball in the middle of their hot streak. We can just only hope that this is the end of that hot streak and those 2 days help cool them down.
Todd Derry joining us here. What was the changeover from the Guardians? Because it was like, hey, it's a good team. And then Shane Bieber got hurt and we went, well, that's the end of that season. And they just continue to go through. Was there a message that was sent? Or is it just, hey, you know what? It's different from last year because we're using every one of these games as a playoff atmosphere. What was it?
I think, honestly, it was the new voice or voices with the coaching staff in that clubhouse. This is Steven Vogt's first rodeo, and he's done a fantastic job. He's going to win Manager of the Year. I think no one talks about Ty Correa and Craig Albernaz, who were added to the staff, who've done an unbelievable job. Brad Goldberg, Pride of Beechwood, Ohio, bullpen coach. These guys, and then you got the steady hand of Carl Willis. I think it's a next man up mentality. It's also, you know, now everyone's talking about, oh, the Tigers are the youngest team in baseball. The Guardians were the youngest team in baseball the majority of the season. So they kind of don't know what they don't know. And, you know, so, and having Austin Hedges back, I know people think it's ridiculous sometimes that this guy is on the roster when he can't hit. But the truth is, you talk to anyone who was on the team the last 3 years, and they will tell you the reason why last season went south was a huge void in that clubhouse, not having that veteran leadership in Austin Hedges. And it's worked out great. And they just kept going. They kept grinding. And I've said this all year long about Steven Vogt. He used this roster masterfully. Terry Francona, God bless him, the best manager in the history of this
organization. Here comes the butt. But?
Oh, no.
But no. I'm not bad-mouthing him. I'm just saying he was very loyal to certain veterans and played guys through the entire time. Tyler Freeman is a great example. My brother's fantasy football team name in our league last year was Tyler Freeman Sundays Only, because Tito would only use him on Sundays. This year, you see with Vogt, these guys are all fresh. Everybody's rotating around. Everybody's getting at bats. These guys aren't rotting on the bench for a week or 10 days and then coming off and going 0-for-4 and then sitting for another 5, 6, 7 days. So I think that Vogt managing that roster the way he did really made them a true team. I don't know if you guys read the Athletic piece that Zach Meisel wrote about the bullpen, but Eric Zabrowski.
Yes.
There was a great quote in there from Eric Zabrowski, left-handed relief pitcher who's a rookie who came up, and he was talking to Hedges, and Hedges is like, listen, teams aren't like this. Teams aren't this close. This is not reality for the rest of your career. You are coming into a situation where it is a close, tight-knit group, and these guys really play for each other and get each other and like each other. It's not like this. And I think that starts at the top with Steven Vogt.
We've got Todd Derry right now on the hotline, getting us amped up for what is going to be a great ALDS showdown against Detroit. Game 3. I'm looking at Game 3. The reason I want to ask you about Game 3 before we've even played the first two games is I'm not sure what the Guardians are going to do with that starting rotation and who's going to be out on the mound for Game 3. That's Wednesday. What do you think would be the right move?
You know, Anthony, that's a really good question because I don't think they know what they want to do yet. In my opinion, and again, they haven't even announced the Game 2 starter, but I got to believe it's going to be Matthew Boyd. I think he's earned it. I think he's pitching next to Tanner Bibee. I think he's pitching better than any of those other starters. And I do think it kind of depends on if you're up 2-1 or 2-0, if you're down 2-0, or if it's 1-1. I really think that there are scenarios they're going to play out. If I were the manager and I had to name a Game 3 starter right now, it's a really tough thing. We have no idea about Alex Cobb. It seems like they have a plan for him. I don't know what that is. But the good news about this series, guys, is with It's good and it's bad because Detroit has a similar situation going on with their starting rotation. You're going to go with Bivey in game one. And then in game two, I believe they'll go with Boyd. But since there's off days after games one and game two, you are going to be able to, if Bivey doesn't have it, or let's say I think Bivey's the only one of this rotation that you would see go even into the sixth inning. Because I believe if Matthew Boyd in game two gets through the first time through the order, or the first two times through, they're going right to their big four. Or even if you want to say the six pack with my guys, Andrew Walters and Eric Zabrowski. But in game three, I could also see a scenario where they say, we're going to let Gavin Williams start and pitch two innings and then go to the pen the rest of the way. They can do this because of the days off in the series. Everyone's going to be fresh. Even at worst case, these guys have to pitch back-to-back one time in this series, games three and four. Then you have a day off before game five, if necessary. But on the other side of it, the Tigers are going to do the same thing, so we'll see.
If the Guardians in game one have, let's say, for instance, a one-run lead going into the eighth inning, do you think Class A comes out there in the eighth?
In game one?
In game one.
It kind of, Anthony, all depends on the usage of the other guys. Now, if you tell me that Bivey was out in the fourth inning or in the third inning and they had to go early with Heron and Cade Smith and Gattis, then maybe I would say yes for a two-inning save. He only did it once this season, and it was that extra inning game late in the season where he threw 10, I think it was 10 pitches in two innings or 14 pitches in two innings. I don't think that they would do it unless it was absolutely necessary. But I could see it happening if that scenario came up where they had to go to the relievers early. Vogt is not afraid to do this. It just really kind of depends.
Yeah, just knowing there's a day in between again, looking at that schedule, and then I'm anticipating we're going to be going up against Skubal in game two. So, and if that is the case, it just puts a premium on holding on for dear life in that first game. And I know our bullpen has been great across the board, but we know who he trusts, and this is why. I mean, you have the dominant closer in the game, but someone who is capable of doing two innings. You need that game one. You need to do whatever it takes.
It is a must-win with Skubal going in game two. I would agree with you. I'll say this. Whoever's the Tigers, from a starting rotation standpoint, we don't know. According to, you know, in talking to my brother, who's very dialed in, you know, he lives there, so he hears all this stuff. There, A.J. Hinch, their manager, who thinks he invented baseball, very arrogant, don't like him. I'm his 10, don't like the Tigers. You can put me in that first hour.
All right.
But he is embracing this pitching chaos. So he, in game one, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if he started Tyler Holton. If you remember earlier in the year, the Guardians faced Tyler Holton twice. He started two games in the series, or he went back-to-back because he was an opener. I could see them doing that in game one and piecing it through. Or even, no joke, I couldn't believe that he went to this Jackson Jobe, their former first-round pick. Guy pitched four innings in two games in September, and then he put him out there in a one-run game in the seventh yesterday, which he ended up blowing. Nothing was hard hit, but they could start Jackson Jobe. They could start Tyler Holton in game one, and then you're into a bullpen game. And for the Guardians, from a hitting perspective, they haven't seen most of these guys because the majority of them have come up late. So we didn't see Brendan Hanafy. We didn't see Brant Herder. We didn't, you know, the who was the lefty yesterday who got the win for them? Sean Gunther. We didn't see him either. So wouldn't surprise me at all if they did that. But I agree with you, Anthony. When you have your ace on the mound in game one and Tarik Skubal's not on the other side and it's a home game and your crowd is going to be amped, you have got to win that game.
I got another question for you. Mm-hmm. Why we got you on, Todd, to answer these exact questions. Jose Ramirez, in the playoffs, legacy-wise, what is on the line in this series?
Okay, so if he goes out and does a complete dud and they get swept or something, will people locally say, well, you know, he's been great, but he hasn't done anything since 2016 in the playoffs?
They will.
Maybe. They will.
They will.
Legacy-wise, He's one of the greatest to ever play here. His number's still being retired. He's not going anywhere.
Is he a Hall of Famer already, or does he need a big performance?
I don't know. I mean, it would definitely enhance his legacy. I think who knows what the Hall of Fame? Harold Baines is in the Hall of Fame, right? I mean, it's as Jim Rome used to say, it's not the Hall of Very Good. I could see it. Jose being a Hall of Famer, sure. So I don't know. But I think locally, does it hurt his legacy if he never does anything deep in the playoffs the rest of his career? Sure.
No. Todd, I'm sorry. Because you made me jump in there. Honestly, I mean, there might be some people who, like, 20 years from now, are like, well, what are you doing in the playoffs? I think that I don't know, man. It seems like he's untouchable. It seems like, and rightfully so.
He's untouchable to me.
Yeah. I think we'll love him forever.
I do, too. And here's the other thing. The further removed you get from this stuff, the stuff you start to forget. And you know what I mean?
Like, yes.
Jason Kipnis, his last few years here was a total dog. I was all over him. I didn't think he was great. But guess what? I don't remember any of that stuff. I just remember the dirtbag from 2016 and from the years prior. And you know, we love him now. And you know, the further you get removed from these guys, you know, Josh Tomlin, right? I will love Josh Tomlin forever for what he did in 2016. But he was junk a lot of his career too, right? So I think the further you get away from it, who's gonna bash Jose Ramirez, the guy who took $150 million less than his market value to stay in Cleveland his entire career?
I think that's a really good point, and I totally agree with you. Todd, thank you very much for the time. You're welcome for the Vine. All the best.
Anything for you, boys. Have a great one.
Thank you. Listen to the Guardians cast, the Dairy Brothers Guardians cast. It's on the free Odyssey app. They're part of the family. You hear these men at times on 92.3 The Fan, just like you did with Todd just a second ago. Loved having Todd Dairy on. Great dude. Listen to the Dairy Brothers Guardians cast. I'm going to take these phone calls here in just a moment.
What a breakdown, though. An amazing breakdown of the
importance.
He knows
what he's watching, guys.
For game one.
That's why we had him on.
Did he not just build game one up to be the most important game ever for the Guardians?
Yeah.
Like, we know playoff baseball is a big deal. Every pitch is life or death. But I think if you were listening to that interview, it even took on a new persona, this
why
game one.
Why is it? Help me understand this. I wanted to bring this up with Todd. Because Keith asked the same question. He threw 88 pitches. Scooble did. In game one of this two-game sweep.
Correct.
Why can't he pitch on Saturday? On short rest?
Well, it's that you are going to need him either way. If you're going to win the series, most likely because you're the road team, you're probably going to need five games to do it. And so if
so he, would he pitch in game five?
Two in game
saying.
Five, yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
And he'd have full rest for game five, that second go around.
All right.
So maybe that's the thought.
Never mind. That's all I need. Because it's hard for me to do the mats because you get a day off in between.
Now you got to get to game five. And so maybe.
I'd rather just.
There'd be a criticism.
Get rid of him.
If he only pitches once in the series and they lose, it's like, well, you only pitched him once in the series. That was your best weapon.
I mean, though, you always have to take a risk. Them's the breaks what you get. I could understand, like, on full rest for either game, because if you start, gosh, if they were to take Saturday, I'm going to have a lump in my throat on Monday morning.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever the Browns do, hopefully the Browns were to win, but, like, I'm going to have a lump in my throat if they were to lose on Saturday. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, because you would be a big-time underdog.
Yeah.
It's not that we got no shot or anything. I don't want to make it seem like that, but, I mean, the reality is he's been the best. He's been the best pitcher.
Well, if they still a win and they still have their best pitcher twice, that's a... And you only need three wins to win
and
the series.
And the way you look at it that way, that is an issue.
Better win it. Better win
There's
on Saturday.
There's only one guy that I'm really worried about on that whole roster, and it's that guy.
Not the 30-year-old Andy Ibanez who hit the three-run double?
No, it's not him.
216-474-0092.
He got it out of his system.
Let me get
to
Demos.
He had one.
Demos and well, it's the same thing with why am I drawing a blank?
Jason Giambi.
No. Who hit the home run in Game 7 that tied it up?
Rajay Davis.
I kept wanting to say Raul Mondesi. Demos and Shaker.
I like him.
You're next up on the fan. Rajay Davis. Thank you.
Good morning. So I'm not worried about I'm not worried about the
Hey, Mike Valeni here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
These games this weekend because Detroit is the hottest team in baseball. Last year, both teams in the World Series were wild card teams, right? So we got to watch out for that. But Ken, I think you're being a little bit you're projecting your nervousness on the Guardians.
Hell yeah, I am.
Yeah, I think they're loose. I mean, I think they're the same team. They've been there all year. They've had some injuries and so forth. But I think we're coming together, too. We had our little lull there in September, and now we've been playing well. So I'm not that worried about this. You know, baseball's streaky. An earlier caller said that. You know, you just don't know what's going to happen. But you have to trust Vogt in his process and how he's doing this
year.
Well,
I would say more I'm projecting my nervousness on you. Or everybody else. Yeah. I don't think they care that I'm nervous. I don't think they care about that. Like, what am I nervous about? They've had a great season. What I'm nervous about is that we go another year without winning a World Series. But I know that those things obviously don't fall off the trees. The other thing I'm nervous about, I just don't want to take anti-Dolan calls if they lose to the Tigers.
Oh, I agree with
that completely.
That's
what I'm nervous about. Yeah.
I totally agree with that because they're going to come out of the woodwork for no reason because we're the most successful team, you know, in Cleveland for the last 20 years. And so I don't get that. But, well, I shouldn't say that. The Cavs won a championship. But you know what I'm saying,
consistently,
though.
Consistently. Yeah, consistently. Yeah, I get what you're
saying. Yeah. And so, you know, let's just enjoy where we're at right now. We are playing with house money. The only thing that bothers me is having these few days off, except that I think that the pitching staff could use it. And going back to Class A, yes, given the fact that we've got these days off between games, I'm more than happy to put him in the eighth inning and let him see how many pitches he could do because we're stacked in the bullpen. And that's why we're going to win the series.
I like your thinking. And I like your style, Demos. Thank you very much for the call. 216-474-0092. Yes, you were going to say something? Oh, sorry. I worry. I hate to overuse the term worry because I just think it's like, come on, stop being such a baby about it. I have concerns, and the concerns are all fan-related. They're all fan-related. I hate having the discussion. I've watched 112 Guardians games this year. Is that good? I watched 112.
Really watched them all.
Yes, I did.
I watched you watch a couple of those, and you didn't actually watch them.
And how many have you watched him
I've
watch?
I've watched Ken watch at least 48 Guardians.
And then
games.
I've heard him talk about that. So I've heard him talk about him watching you watch the Guardians.
They're
games.
On all day long. I can watch them in the afternoon. And frankly, there was lots of times I did. So I don't even want to hear that.
I will tell you.
Excuse my voice cracking.
In Ken's defense. Very often when we have our very lengthy, comprehensive call to talk about the show.
It lasts like 25 minutes.
You start
ranting and raving about politics. It wouldn't even be that long.
You are oftentimes watching the games or preparing to watch the games.
Yes, because I watched 112 Guardians games this year, which still means I missed 50 games. Where did the 50 games
go?
Yeah.
Damn it, you guys got me from the point I was going to make, and I totally forgot what I was going to say. Thank you very much.
Something about watching The Watcher.
No, I forget what the hell it was. How about you go ahead and bring up something for once for crying out loud once we get into a pit?
Well, I mean, you're getting it thrown back in Damn your it. Face about whether or not there's pressure. You know, we think about pressure so often the way of like the Browns this week have
That's
pressure.
That's what I got. That's what I remember.
Because if they...
Shut up. I want to talk. No,
okay,
no.
Go ahead.
No, you talk.
Just we know jobs are always on the line. In this case, there are no jobs on the line. It's not like the front office or the manager or anybody on the staff. Nobody's losing their job based on whether or not they have a good series. There is some pressure, maybe, Jose Ramirez, right? How it's been brought up. It's been since 2016.
Also,
Okay, yeah. There's a little bit of postseason. You know, Clayton Kershaw had postseason pressure.
But it also can't be it can't be Pollyanna either. If Stephen Vogt does something stupid, I can't think of an example off the top of my head, then it gets called out for it. I can't just sit there and go, well, it's been such a great season.
Well, how he handles game three is gonna be interesting.
Like, yes,
we're all sitting here debating it and how that goes. If it doesn't work and they end up losing the series because of it, okay, yeah.
And does he have a plan now, and does that plan change depending on the outcome of the first two games?
Great question.
Clearly. So that's a very big issue to everybody. What I just want to avoid, I can't sit there and avoid all negativity if they don't win. What I want to avoid is the same old for Guardians talk. 112 games, dedicated it, said I'm watching more baseball this year, locked in on more baseball this year, because I took them for granted when they had Terry Francona. And I apologize to that for some of that because, it means that I wasn't paying as close of attention. I might have had it on in the background, but to this point, was I watching it? No. No, I wasn't. Well, I locked in this year, and I see the things that they do well. I see the things that they do that aren't so well. And damn it, I don't want to sit there and have to take a bunch of people giving calls about how they hate the Dolans and this is why they don't go to baseball games anymore. So if we're just putting our fears out there, that's my fear. Demos is right. I'm projecting my fear at taking those calls and doing the same old song and dance about the Guardians again. And I don't think it would happen if they were to lose to the Yankees. I don't think it would happen if they were to lose in the World Series. It would definitely happen if they lost to the Tigers. Royals in the next round, maybe, but we can't get one step ahead of ourselves. Breaking down what I'm afraid of, I'm not afraid of anything. I think they played a tremendous game. The people on social media are right. There were plenty of people who took Detroit to win the division this year. So if we're going to break down preseason expectations, then they're the team that's technically been a disappointment. Now, that's a hell of a way to spin things if you ask me, but I'm pretty good at that. We're the team that probably is playing with the pressure because we're the team that had the 10-game lead, lost it, still won the division, had two celebrations, thought there were three, but that was AI, had two celebrations over making the playoffs and then winning the division. Now we got that first round bye. There's just so much pressure on you because I don't want to have happen in two situations here over the last calendar year where we go, boy, did we really want to rest our starters against Cincinnati? Boy, did we really need that week off between the end of the season and the ALDS? You don't want to do anything like that. That sucks. So, yeah, I do think that, and Zach Meisel says he gives the Guardians a slight chance to win.
We had that with the Cavs, too, by the way. So it's all three sports.
Yes.
That we've run into that.
They're very right. Meisel says that he thinks that there will be, he gives the, you know, Saris gives the Guardians a slight chance to win. Or the slight edge in the series. Zach wrote about it and said that by the time the series is over, he would pick Hunter Gaddis and Cade Smith and Tim Herron. He said the rest of the Tigers in the AL Central became familiar with them. To those in faraway places tuning in for some October tension, get ready to learn about the best-kept secret in baseball. Talking about these players, talking about this bullpen and what's going on. Which I would totally agree with here. Because I think you pick your poison. I mean, there's been a couple of guys that have... Like, I made the jokes about Pedro Avila, where it's like, well, he's kind of a human victory cigar. If you're down by seven, he's going to be down there, so you can go ahead and hang out and do whatever. If you're up by seven and he's out there, then you kind of hang out and do whatever. But the other guys here, Hunter Gaddis, for them to be able to transform him from a starting pitcher to a rotational guy, from a starting pitcher to a bullpen guy, I think has been fantastic. Cade Smith, to a lot of us novices, not the Justin Lottas of the world. I think he fell out of the heavens for a lot of us there. And Tim Herron's done a fine job. And obviously, Emmanuel Clase is the class of the league right now. So I would obviously pick the Guardians to have the advantage. But I'm nervous because of all the other conversation that I'm trying to avoid.
Yeah, right. I know if you were watching yesterday and you were watching how fired up they were when they came through and cleared the bases to make it 5-2, and you're looking how amped that entire team is, like, yeah, they've got that look of the no one's going to stop us now. That kind of team that they're the hottest team ever, it would seem right now. And they're playing with just all of that, all the nerves, all that stuff. That's the true house money team of all time with what they've been able to do. But none of that matters when this game starts on Saturday in front of our crowd. Place is going to be going bonkers. And it is going to be a treat. It's a postseason baseball. I mean, it is awesome. The way we talk about it, the way we have memories of it. I am pumped for it. Yeah, I'm going to pick the Guardians to win too. And this is going to be a great showcase for a team that we had literally no expectations for before the season started. They jumped out to that big lead to start the year. And then, you know, wasn't great. I mean, it was kind of 500 baseball for a long time until the last 2 weeks of the year.
And most of these guys, and especially in the everyday lineup guys, now have had that 2022 playoff experience as well. This is not the eyes wide open, first time ever being here thing. It should feel old hat to some of them. You know, the guys you're going to depend on to step up big now have that seasoned experience.
Absolutely.
And I expect it from those guys, from a Stephen Kwan or a,
and how about
or Andrés Giménez or someone
how about
like
Josh
that.
Naylor after how things went sideways, you know, in the Bronx,
right.
and how we can feel really good.
There is
good.
Pressure on him.
Yeah, and you know what? There I is. Feel like that's a guy who will respond. Do you not? I mean, strangely enough, I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about that. The lineup as a whole, we definitely talked about, like, you know, they would it be the shock of all shocks if they went cold at the wrong time? No, because we had concerns throughout the year. Like,
the lineup has its faults, but you've brought it up. Everyone else in the AL has faults in their lineup.
Yes. Absolutely.
Mitch, please.
All right, guys, this one comes to us from Patriots coverage on NBC Sports in Boston. Hosts Michael Holly and Greg Bedard got into a heated debate yesterday on who's more at fault for the New England Patriots' recent three-game slide.
The biggest problem is fill in the blank. Who?
It's got to be Jerod Mayo. I mean, he's the head coach. He's in charge of everything. He tells the offensive coordinator, or should be, this is what I want to do. I want to tell the team, we're going to go into this. We need to grab a lead against San Francisco. The defense, his baby, they're getting gashed all over the place, and it's not just because they're outmanned. They're being out-schemed.
Jerod Mayo is in that line, but I think it starts with Elliot Wolf. Come on.
No, no.
Oh, you're
no.
kidding me? Are you kidding me?
Who's your left tackle? This team is not that bad. If you brought Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels,
what is wrong with you?
Those guys, I could tell you, would be doing way more with this team than these guys are.
Name the starting left tackle yesterday. What's his name?
Demontre Jacobs.
And what do you know about him? What do you like about him? What do you see on film about him?
He's big and long.
He sucks. They have four. They've had four left tackles in 4 weeks. They got Mike.
Don't scheme around it. A lot of teams are going through this stuff.
You can't scheme around. They didn't. They came into the season without a left tackle. A professional football team. You want to talk about unprofessional?
Seahawks are on their third right tackle.
The front office is
unprofessional
too. They didn't have a left tackle. They didn't have a number one wide
receiver.
Prime
Rivers, the NFL.
And they got a backup quarterback. The three most important positions. They got jokes at those positions. That's the problem. That's the number one problem.
They're 3-1, the Seahawks are. Who did you agree with there? That was good stuff. Audio courtesy of what now, Mitch?
That is Patriots coverage, a show on NBC Sports Boston.
Awesome. And that was Michael Holly.
Sound like you and me.
Greg Bedard, yes. Yeah.
Michael Holly,
I read his book. Oh, yeah. Really? I read his book.
He's been on the show.
Yeah, he has been on the show. That was some good stuff. Who do you agree with? Do you believe that problem over there, is that a problem with the roster, or is that a problem with the coach?
It's the roster. Come on.
Hey, it might be a problem with the coach.
Really? So we're going to get into an argument.
Well, I mean, we've been hearing a bunch of stuff. Did you understand that they had to start OTAs late because their coaching staff wasn't ready? So they had to push back OTAs?
So whose fault was that?
Was it Elliot Wolf's, or was it the coaching staff? Were they doing that? I mean, whose fault is it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just look at it.
I don't think they're a great team.
Yeah, talent-wise.
But I think they're only in the beginning of this build. Because it was Bill Belichick before. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I don't think there should be like some humongous expectations.
Yeah, but we're on the outside, so we go, there's no expectations. They're right there, and they're looking at 1-3. So when we're all getting worked up about 1-3, well, we actually had some expectations. Or did we? Because, again, the outside forces said that, no, you guys ain't going to be that good anyway. It's like, well, we were 11-6 last year. What are you talking about? Yeah, but who are you 11-6 with? I don't know. The starting quarterback that we have now was, I mean, they say he was 5-1, but I say he was 4-1. I know he started the game against Indianapolis, but that was a quick exit, was it not? They were still 4-1 with the guy. But we look at all this stuff differently there. They look at their situation much differently than we would. They're right there in the thick of it. And they, to them, 1-3 is unacceptable. To us, 1-3, I mean, that has to be unacceptable. That is just it. I mean, right now we are staring down the barrel.
I assume they were going to be. Yeah. Well, I agree. I totally agree with you.
Hey, man, you can be 2-4 and fight it out. You're 1-4. I don't know, man. I don't know. I think the walls start to close in on you. That building gets really weird at 1-4.
We know how it is. Absolutely. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter anything. Like, you know, we talk about it here in Cleveland, like two-time coach of the year. Hmm. That stuff does not matter to Jimmy Haslam if they start a tailspin.
Well, he wants this. No one's going to believe this. He has left. He's had conversations, or excuse me, people have had conversations before about wanting to fire the coach. He hasn't. Fans have called in about wanting to fire the coach before. Out of now his fifth year, he's missed the playoffs two out of those 4 years. People want more. People are very critical of him. They've had to let go of staff after making the playoffs. I don't think he wants to move on from that front office or that head coach. But things change over time. I mean, already I'm getting these things from these Facebook posts about, well, has the time run out on Kevin Stefanski? I'm like, really? We're a month into this thing? He was the defending coach of the year?
That's like nothing
and
else.
People say that's last year.
None of the other 4 years matter all of a sudden. But, like the two incredible jobs he did, all the stuff they dealt with when it comes to adversity. The universal praise he got from around the NFL.
Doesn't matter.
The stuff he did with other quarterbacks.
Doesn't matter. And if I make the argument, if you keep losing games, and I make the argument, well, if you were to fire Kevin Stefanski, he'll be hired in 5 minutes.
I think a lot of people
would line up and say, okay, good, let him be someone else's problem.
I think there are people who would love to line up and say that right now. Yes.
That's what you deal with. And that's what they're dealing with in New England there. Today is the last day of our boss's tenure here, Andy Roth.
The guy that brought us in.
Going down to Atlanta. I don't do goodbyes very well whatsoever. It's a weakness for me. I will say Andy has been a great boss. Atlanta is getting Atlanta is very lucky to get a good program director like him. He's been a great boss. He's been a great person. And from my personal perspective, guys, I would not have a chance to talk to you at all any morning, any day, and I would probably be in a job that I hate had he not seen any chance in me 13 years ago. So. A big piece of my personal history is leaving the station today, but Andy is a wonderful man, and we love Andy a lot, and we love his family, and we wish him very well down in the city of Atlanta.
Well, I echo those sentiments perfectly. When this station started, people forget, if you're young, there was one sports talk station in town, and they did it one way, and people were like, well, you can't. Cleveland doesn't need a second sports station, doesn't need anything like that. Do you know how hard it is to get something made from scratch to then become basically the standard bearer in a town? And we've been on the air for 13 years, and this thing has been humming for a long time, and it's not easy. It's not easy to do. And Andy was somebody who was doing this for a time in Buffalo, and he had been all over the place, but he was determined. He wasn't from here. You know how hard that is? And to understand what Clevelanders want. And to have that happen, and I think in short order, like he'll say it took a lot of time. I think this station was humming pretty quickly, and it's a testament to him because he was a visionary. Yeah. Despite the amount of times I feuded with him.
Which was often.
And the fact that he hung up on me our very first phone call when I was in Syracuse
trying
to get this job.
Well, because you led him astray. We don't need to get into that. Owen, you got anything to say?
I'll tell him later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey. You don't got to say it on the air. I know.
Well, he's the reason that I get to be on the radio.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, but people hear...
Like the sole reason, and I'm going to miss him.
Yeah, man. I mean, people hear the voices on the air. They always think, oh, the sports talk show hosts. Those are the guys that make a station. They're responsible for it. But he's the guy that made this station sound the way it does.
Yeah. So it's a dream. I don't work for a living. I'm up for a lot of hours, but it's not work, and I get to live it because he saw something in me a lot of other people didn't. So.
And now we're going to critique this segment for 40 minutes after the show.
Yeah, probably. I mean, see, anyway, he's not done now. Today is his last day, meaning he's going to coach right up to the end. It'd be like if they let the coach, when they go on to another team, if they let the coach the bowl game. Is this how it feels if they do that? Find out during the emerging podcast scene coming up after the show.
Maybe he'll come on with us. He has some more stories, I'll tell you that.
Oh, gosh. No, he can't come on there.
No, he can't come on the emerging podcast scene.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.